And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. Well, the populists are out in force with our pitchforks and our bullhorns, and we're ready to take our torches and set fire to all of Wall Street, and who can blame us? It is easy and correct to be outraged by the hundreds of millions of dollars that the people at AIG, a company owned 80% now by we, the American people, who had to bail out a bunch of Wall Street hacks for making billions of dollars without the money to back it up. If you know nothing about credit derivative swaps, probably the one thing you do know is that they were pretend insurance contracts. You see, insurance, under the insurance laws that have existed for, at least since the Great Depression, if you're going to offer insurance on something, you've got to have the reserves to back it up. If you want to insure a place for fire or for hurricane damage or for anything else, insurance companies have to, through complex contracts, but basically through reinsurers, got to have the money to back it up. And, in fact, we have insurance commissioners in virtually every state in the United States, probably every state, definitely at the federal level, to make sure that insurance companies aren't just hedging their bets, but that their bets will be paid off. Insurance companies are supposed to be like the casino, like the house. They're supposed to always be able to prevail, or at least enough to deal with a current problem, and then they can raise your premiums for the future. And that's the reason why credit derivative swaps were not called credit derivative insurance. Had they been called credit derivative insurance, or credit insurance would be the better name, had they been called credit insurance, then you would have had banks who said, let's look at the creditworthiness of this. You sell us insurance, and if it's not creditworthy, you pay us back. But they weren't credit insurance. With all the regulations that that entails, they were credit derivative swaps. They were swaps. They were barter. They were exchanges. They were, I'll give you my farming implement if you let me borrow your horse. Because was not regulated. And it wasn't regulated because the Republicans in Congress insisted that these kinds of regulations, which, by the way, date back to even before the Great Depression, they date back to the bucket shops. I've done a show on this in the past, of about 100 years ago when people used to place side bets on stocks. They were outlawed. But they were re-put in the law by the Republican Congress, sneaking it into an omnibus bill that Bill Clinton actually signed in the last couple of weeks of his administration. Had he refused to sign it, they would have accused him of shutting the government down. You know how these omnibus bills work. They are generally thousands of pages long. They fund the entire government. Everyone throws all their pet projects in. And when the Republicans are in control, that's what happens. So that's why this stuff was legal. And we all know that for all the mistakes in the subprime housing crisis, it was indeed the credit derivative swaps, the side bet on the main bet, the side bet on these houses, on these subprime loans, allowed by companies like AIG, insurance companies with AAA ratings. Let's not at all avoid the anger at the ratings agencies, Moody's and Standard & Poor's and Fitch, and the one claiming that this stuff is AAA, the best of the line, cannot fail. You know, there's lots of levels. There's A, AA, AAA, B, BB, BBB, C, D. They were AAA. Betting they wouldn't fail. Well, I guess these sure bets were not sure bets. We all know what happened. But the reason I'm reminding people why we are in the huge mess we're in, that it was done precisely because some very rich people on Wall Street were designing ways to get richer and richer, not by creating anything, but by selling things that they knew were not backed up. I have no problem with legitimate insurance. I understand the need for it. I have fire insurance on my home. I have auto insurance on my car. I have flood insurance on my house. I get insurance. But when you have insurance with a company that doesn't have the reserves to back it up, that ain't insurance. That's gambling. and I understand gambling, too. I happen to like to play poker. But you know what? When I play poker, I play for stakes that are so small that if I lose, I hardly notice. And I would never play poker for stakes that if I did lose, I would notice or would make any significant dent in my ordinary life. That is problem gambling. And AIG, along with all of them, Bear Stearns, Lehman Brothers, Goldman Sachs, all the banks in Europe, UFB Press in France and Deutsche Bank in Germany, all of them were gambling with massive sums of money. Sums of money we can't even dream of. Why am I bringing all this up? I mean, you know all this. Because it takes me back to the legitimate populist anger that I saw and kind of reveled in a bit, I have to admit, in watching the congressional hearings yesterday with the new CEO of AIG, a guy working for a dollar who came in last minute to help them, Mr. Liddy, and explaining and justifying and trying to justify why he paid $165 million in retention payments to executives to convince them to stay and wind down AIG's business in their financial planning session. Now, we still don't know all the facts here, and I think it should be clear that we don't. A lot of stuff gets thrown around. People are angry. In fact, just recently I heard people were blaming Chris Dodd, of all people, for these bonuses. How ironic. Senator Chris Dodd of Connecticut was the one who had the idea to limit the bonuses in the first place. Recall that George Bush, in his bill, his troubled asset recovery program, insisted that the executives get their bonuses, and the Republicans indeed forced, back when they had more power than they do today, forced the Democrats to accept that the bonuses could be paid in the first TARP program. The Federal Reserve at that time did not require any limits on bonuses. They wanted the bonuses as retention payments. And to be fair, to some extent, and I think we're going to find out more in the next coming days, to some extent that was current Treasury Secretary Geithner, Tim Geithner, back when he was working for the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, and yes, Larry Summers as well. To some extent, I think we're going to find out they were involved in those provisions. They did so while working under the Bush administration, perhaps with direction from above. But they cannot be above criticism here. The Inside Scoop gives you all the news the government doesn't want you to know, and it doesn't matter whether the government is Democratic or Republican in that sense. The point is that Chris Dodd tried to stop at least the retroactive payments. I mean, he stopped the payments going forward to the executives. But he also tried to stop the retroactive payments. And the administration, to some extent the Bush administration, and to some extent people that were holdovers, people like Tim Geithner and Larry Summers, insisted that at least it not be allowed retroactively. Allow the retroactive bonuses to occur. Just don't allow it going forward. And they said there may be some problems in the law, and who knows. But now people are actually trying to blame Chris Dodd for his back up against the wall for saying, look, you're not going to get any restrictions on executive salaries unless you only restrict them going forward. Chris Dodd's a good man. I won't let his name be maligned. But I raise all of this because it's easy to complain after the fact. After the abuses at Abu Ghraib came forward, any number of Republicans were heard, throw Lindy England to the lions, convict Charles Grainer. Oh, this is awful. These renegade officials, how dare they do this kind of thing? My colleague Mike Lane, the Republican I bring on my show, could wax eloquent about how horrific Abu Ghraib was. At the same time as he was saying, it's an isolated incident, these are lower down officials, it's not emblematic of anything going on in the administration. This is a small thing. In other words, look here, be mad, but don't look behind the curtain. Or to use a different, perhaps better metaphor, see this iceberg? Just look at the stuff floating atop the surface. don't look at the 90% of that dangerous iceberg underneath. The same, I suggest, is true about the payments to the AIG executives. Oh, let's really get angry about the $165 billion. It's amazing to see Republicans of all people, the ones who said that Wall Street shouldn't be regulated, the ones who said that capitalism only works if the government stays out of it, getting angry, real or imagined, at these payments to AIG officials. Look there, they say. Look there. Don't notice that, well, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac have their own payments. And so does Citibank. And so does virtually every corporation and bank we've aided. And a number that we haven't, but are getting our aid indirectly through AIG. One of the things that we should make clear about these payments to AIG is that really they're kind of a Marshall Plan for the rest of the world. And I think that should be said explicitly. I understand this is a worldwide depression. I get it. I understand how dangerous it is worldwide. The last worldwide Great Depression, let's not forget, led to the rise of fascist Germany, fascist Italy, and the bloodiest war on the soil of the earth. So I recognize the dangers worldwide. But still, if American taxpayers realized how much of our money was going to Deutsche Bank and the French banks, I think the French banks got the largest share, via AIG. You see, we give the money to AIG, and then AIG actually pays back these stupid insurance contracts. Excuse me, they weren't insurance, credit derivative swaps. If we call them insurance, they have to be regulated, so we can't call them insurance. Pay these bad bets to a bunch of foreigners who never should have made the bets to begin with. Now, to be clear, don't want to bash the foreign banks too much. American banks made the same bad bets. But at least when we're aiding American banks, we can think that some of that money's coming home for America. I don't know about you, but I think Germany and France are rich enough to help their own banks. Call me a populist. Maybe in the third world, they need more of our money. That's why actually I support Obama's plan for the IMF. None of this is easy. None of this is simple. And yes, we are right to be angered by what happened at AIG. I just don't want us to miss the forest for the trees. I don't want us to do what happened at Abu Ghraib. The Republicans, oh, Abu Ghraib is awful. And they never addressed the general question of torture. In the bailout of AIG, I hope we take the top of the iceberg and use it as an example to look underneath. We need to stop massive executive compensation nationwide. AIG, for all the anger over the retention payments that were paid in the last few weeks, given the amount that the American people owe the company, and surely we should have shareholder rights, given all that anger, justified anger, how come we don't see any anger over the payments they made in 2007? AIG, like virtually every corporation in America and the world, has payments, performance bonuses, they are called, that have nothing to do with performance. I shall repeat. Performance bonuses paid in the millions and hundreds of millions of dollars to people who fail to perform. Now, I've railed about this before. I remember when Michael Eisner got some $200 million from Disney at a time when he was running Disney into the ground. The stock was losing half its value, and he got a golden parachute of hundreds of millions of dollars. It's time to ban golden parachutes. Now, don't get me wrong. If there were a way to do this through the private market, I'm not a socialist. I believe in some socialist programs. I'm not a pure socialist. I believe in capitalism. I believe in a mixture. Let's let the private markets handle it, but they can't. And the reason they can't is because of the race to the bottom. It all has to do with something I've talked about many, many, many times, shareholders' rights. If you learn, I don't know, economics 101, corporations 101, if they teach you in high school what a corporation is, they'll tell you that the people who own the corporation are shareholders. That's what you have to get right to say to get an A on your exam. And if you really think the shareholders own corporations, then I'd like to sell you the Brooklyn Bridge, because I own the Brooklyn Bridge just about as much as shareholders own corporations. Yeah, that's true in a small privately held corporation. You got three shareholders, they all have significant power. But in these publicly traded corporations, when shareholders own one millionth of a corporation, when even large pension funds may own 8% of a corporation, and when shareholders get elections that are somewhat less free than those that elected Saddam Hussein or Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, elections where there's only one name on the list, and if you vote no, it doesn't matter, then those shareholders aren't owning corporations. The problem with AIG is not, really, in my view, that a bunch of greedy financial planners, Wall Street types, are taking millions of dollars, hundreds of millions from the American taxpayer. That, to me, is just the tip of the iceberg. The problem is that 80% of the shares are owned by the United States government, and the United States government isn't controlling what's happening. Shareholders should control corporations. They should own corporations. Technically, they do. So why can't they decide compensation issues? Why is it that for every share of stock I own, I get this proxy vote where I can vote for the compensation or against it? And if I vote against it, it doesn't matter because, well, the board of directors will ignore my vote. It's too small. Doesn't count. And besides, the board of directors is appointed by the CEO, who himself is appointed by the board of directors. The scary thing about Wall Street is not that thieves like Bernie Madoff exist. The scary thing about Wall Street is that Madoff merely did illegally what a lot of them are doing legally. And the reason why shareholders don't have control of corporations is because of the race to the bottom by the individual states. Here, Joe Biden's home state of Delaware is probably the biggest to blame. You see, corporations are almost all chartered by states. And to be chartered in a state, you don't even have to do business in that state. Most are chartered in Delaware. And they're chartered in Delaware because Delaware is a tiny state that can get lots of money in corporate fees that matter to its treasury while allowing boards of directors and CEOs to rip off the shareholders. Do you know why credit card companies are all in South Dakota? I'll tell you why. Virtually every state in the country has a limit on the interest they can charge you. It's usually around 15%. But South Dakota doesn't have that limit. So if you want a credit card, well, you go to, I don't know, Citibank, which is based in South Dakota, and they can charge you 25% or 30%, any rate they want. Now, you may not live in South Dakota. You may not do business in South Dakota. You may have never been to South Dakota, and your bank is down the corner. But sorry, you have to live under the worst law, South Dakota law, the 50th best law of the 50 states in the country. It's time to have federal law on corporations. We'll talk about the specifics of AIG, and I'm not at all knocking the specifics here. They are gross. They are ugly. This idea that GM employees should give up their health care, but CEOs, oh, we can't break their contracts. No. They have to get the bonuses just because they got us in trouble in the first place. I'll get to that. But please understand the underlying iceberg. Please. The underlying iceberg is that shareholders don't control corporations. The corporations don't even try to make money. They try to make money for the individuals. They try to grab and steal as much as they can and then run. Because corporations are not people. They may be legally persons, a doctrine which I disagree with, but they're not people. People are people. And people are going to do what's in their own best interest. And if you make it in people's best interest to be greedy and to steal from corporations and leave the shareholders holding the bag, most shareholders will be left holding the bag. And this, to me, is the point that John Stewart made so eloquently to Jim Cramer on his show. And if you missed this interview, well, it behooves you to watch it in its entirety. I'm going to be playing some of it, commenting on it. But the point that John Stewart was making is that this is a shell game. That we are putting money in our pensions and our 401ks, holding it for the long term, trying to provide for our retirement, trying to provide college money for our kids, trying to put a little away in a nest egg for the future, and they tell us if we just put it in the bank and it earns interest, how stupid we are. And I agree. The idea of investing in corporations, the idea of the fact that a bunch of people together can provide money for a business entity, that's not a bad idea in theory. I am not anti-capitalist. I'm not. Sorry, Mike Lane, I'm not. But we need regulation. Anytime you have someone playing with other people's money, you need regulation. The reason why you're okay putting your money in that bank, giving to complete strangers your life's earnings, why are you okay with that? People weren't okay with it during the Great Depression. They hid it under their mattresses and, you know, the economy took a dive. You're okay with it because you know that banks are regulated. You know that those banks, if they steal your money, will get in trouble. And you know that in the event that the bank fails, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, one of those wonderful creations of the New Deal, will protect you. That at the end of the day, the federal government will give you your money back. And if you stop trusting the federal government to give you your money back, then the whole country falls apart. What is money? What are those dollar bills in your hand? They used to be backed by gold. They're not. And a bunch of crazies, and I consider them crazy, radicals on the right or the left, sometimes the radicals on the right and the left come together in the name of Ron Paul, say, well, we can't trust the government at all. Go back to the gold standard. It's the only thing we can trust. I don't want to bring this country back to a pre-industrial time. Sorry, those who like Ron Paul. I do still have faith in the government. I still have faith in business. But my faith is tempered by what I learned by the intelligent founders of this United States of America, who had their own imperfections, slavery and women's rights, and et cetera. But the one thing they understood very well, the one thing that James Madison understood very well, was checks and balances. Checks and balances. To me, the essence of the Constitution of the United States of America is checks and balances. You don't give the president all power. You don't give Congress all power. You don't give the Supreme Court all power. You don't give the federal government all power. The states, the individual 50 states, have their power. And the press has its power. And business has its power, too. But government looks over business, regulates business, checks to see what business is doing. And individuals have power over the government. And businesses have power over individuals, and everybody is watching everyone else. And if it all sounds a little too much like we're looking everywhere and we're a little paranoid, that's okay. That's okay. As Menachem Begin once said, even paranoiacs have enemies. It's okay to be paranoid. It's okay to jealously guard one's power. It's okay to watch over things. The reason why this occurred, everything from the creditor swaps to the gifts from AIG to the bonuses, the reason why it occurred is because it was done in secret. For all the apologies of the CEO, Mr. Liddy of AIG, for all his promises to bring some of the money back, it's only because of the public outrage that this guy is even before the cameras at all. For months, Congressman Elijah Cummings had been sending letters have been sending letters to the CEO of AIG saying what were the payments, who got them, what were they? And he'd been stonewalling, responding in part, giving some things, not giving names. Even yesterday, Barney Frank asked him, well, what are the names of the people who got these payments? And Mr. Liddy's response was, well, I can't tell you because these people's, their lives might be in danger. Their lives might be in danger. I can't tell you the truth about these thieves because their lives might be in danger. Well, you know what? Call out the police. Protect their lives. But this idea that evildoers are going to be protected because if they're not, they're going to be lynched, I'm not buying it. Barney Frank didn't buy it either. In fact, Edward Liddy said that he would give the names to Barney Frank as long as they were held in confidence, and Barney Frank, to his credit, said, no deal. No deal. We're going to make them public. And if you refuse, we'll subpoena them. We'll listen to your complaints about threats. But it's sad that it's only this public fury that is going to cause them to give the money back. And I fear, I really fear, that this fury will blow over. You know, when, and again, I really look at the Abu Ghraib story for a perfect example. Abu Ghraib happened. Everyone was angry about torture. We talked about torture for 2 or 3 weeks. Republicans said, that's just Abu Ghraib. It's an isolated moment, so forth. Democrats said, well, no, wait, we think it's coming from the top. The Bush administration stonewalled, said, we're going to investigate. We're going to investigate. 3, 6 months, a year, 2 years later of investigations, and, well, the story moves off the front page. There are other things going on. And what do we find out just a few months ago? Well, we confirmed everything we thought to be true to begin with. Abu Ghraib was not an isolated incident. Torture was prescribed from the very top, from at least Vice President Cheney, if not higher. And there's only one guy higher in the Bush administration than Vice President Cheney. From the top down, they prescribed torture, and it didn't just happen at Abu Ghraib, and it didn't just happen in Guantanamo Bay. It happened in secret prisons across the globe. And now when we say go after those people 5 years after the fact, when we try to channel the rage of Abu Ghraib into today, everyone says, nah, let's move on. Let's move on. Do you see a pattern here? I see a pattern. I see a very clear pattern. We discover some outrage that's happening. The public discovers the outrage. We get furious. The media and the politicians focus on the top of the iceberg, the small part of the outrage. We yell at Linda England, the woman soldier from West Virginia, who's, I think, 18 years old, who, you know, was the bottom rung of the torture scale. We yell at Linda England. We yell at the people taking the bonuses at AIG. We ignore the huge iceberg of torture underneath. We ignore the huge iceberg of executive compensation underneath. And I'm not just talking about the companies that take money from the government. I'm talking about virtually all of Wall Street. And it's not just the United States either. Throughout the world, although it's largely in the United States, executives are making thousands of times what their ordinary workers make. They didn't have to do that to make a very good economy in the 50s and the 60s. This is all new stuff. And they're making this compensation whether or not they performed at all. And shareholders have no power because they're going to the smallest, you know, states and using the weak laws. We need federal law for constitution, for corporations. We need the 90% of the iceberg underneath. But you know what's going to happen here because it happens all the time. Public outrage. Focus on the tip of the iceberg. A promise to investigate the 90% of the iceberg underneath. The investigation takes time. 3 months, 6 months, a year or two. The public moves on, as they do. Their attention span is short. Maybe there's some new war. Maybe the economy gets better. Maybe gas prices go up again. Maybe there's an environmental disaster. All important things. But the anger at the thieves on Wall Street? Well, you can't stay angry at the same thing for 3-4 years. And then, by the time the investigation shows that it happened at the very top, that it was widespread, that it wasn't an isolated incident, well, that's page A23 of the newspaper at best. Time to move on. Look forward rather than back. Didn't we fix that 5 years ago? And the same thing happens again and again and again and again. Whether it's torture or it's the economy. And as John Stewart pointed out in his wonderful interview with Jim Cramer, is that we're being sucker punched. We're being told to put our money away for the long term, but people like Jim Cramer understand that there's a game to be played here, and they're making short-term profits at our expense. Jim Cramer, of course, is the host of Mad Money on CNBC, a financial network, and John Stewart takes him to task. Who are you working for? Are you working for the good guys? Or are you working for the bad guys? Which one is it? Are you working for us? Are you working for them? I'm going to play that clip in just a moment. First, let me go to the lines. Kevin, welcome to the Inside Scoop. Kevin, are you there?
Yeah, hello?
Hello, Kevin. Hello? What are your thoughts on... Yes.
Hello?
You hear me? I hear you.
Oh, okay.
Hi, Kevin.
Jim Crane is working for anyone who pays him.
True.
Okay?
That's hello? True of Wall Street, too.
Yeah, and... You know, I see the end game to all of this, and the end game is most Latin American countries where they have these professional kidnapping squads. And they start cutting off pieces of their loved ones in order for ransom, and that's going to be the end game.
Well, that's about where people are headed with their pitchforks and their torches, but yeah. I'm afraid that it's easy to focus on a few bad doers. Without focusing on the systemic problem underneath. If we don't reform corporate laws in this country, if we don't reform, the only way to stop executive salaries is to make it so that executives don't determine their own salaries. Anytime someone is determining their own salary with other people's money, it's going to be high.
Oh, yeah. You know,
I mean, one of the things, it's interesting, I'll tell you, I do know a lot about Congressman Barney Frank. I used to work for the guy. He is the chairman of the House Financial Services Committee, a very, very powerful person in this area. And he argued years ago to have, listen to this, to require a voluntary vote, a non-binding vote by shareholders on executive salaries, just to require every corporation in America to put to a non-binding vote whether or not shareholders approve of their executive compensation packages. The Republicans in Congress would not let that come to a vote. This non-binding vote, but that Barney Frank wanted to show that actually shareholders don't want to pay these massive sums of money to these CEOs, but, shareholders won't even get a chance to express their opinion, much less enforce their opinion, even though they're supposed to be the owners of the companies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know what's so funny about that kind of mindset is that I'll never forget, I was working with a guy who lives in some Republican stronghold out in Jersey. And his county just voted down a salary raise for a teacher in that county.
Right.
And I'm like, they could do that to the policemen, the teachers, the firemen, determine their salaries. But we can't do that to the CEOs. And me personally, but in the pecking order, I think doctors, teachers, policemen, are more important than corporate executives.
Absolutely. And the thing about it is, people say, we pay doctors.
Now.
No, that's okay. You can go after attorneys. Most of them are, let's just say I know many, many unscrupulous attorneys, unfortunately, and I've encountered them in my practice. That doesn't mean we're all bad, but a bunch of us are, and I'm willing to admit that. But the larger point is this. The public pays teacher, police officer, firefighters' salaries every year.
Mm-hmm.
So it comes to us every year. Wall Street execs pretend that they are creating money and they don't need the public sector. They pretend that they're all about capitalism. They pretend they're all about making money without government aid. And yet what they're doing, in effect, is worse, far worse than paying a government servant every year, because what they're doing is they're betting money, huge sums of money. And the name of the game is heads they win, tails we lose. They make huge bets. In good years, the bets pay off. They make billions. Do they give it back to the people? No. Heck, even the hedge fund owners were arguing 2 years ago that they should pay a smaller rate on their income tax as their own secretaries. Because, well, that's capital gains. It's not income. And, you know, secretaries and teachers and janitors have to pay a higher rate of their income because, well, you know, it's not a capital gain. So they pay less taxes. Many of them, in fact, put their taxes abroad. That's another thing.
Mm-hmm.
Pay very little tax on it. And then when their side bets fail, now they come crawling on their hands and knees. Government, we need you. Government, we need you.
Yeah. Well, me personally, I think there should be a UN tax on corporations.
A UN tax?
Yeah.
Don't get me started on the United Nations. I don't want to give them a lot of money either.
Well,
they've got a lot of corruption and malfeasance.
Has been gutted like a fish since Reagan. Okay.
Yeah, it's kind of a separate issue, Kevin, which I'm happy to argue with you another time. But, you know, to me, the UN is run by a bunch of dictators in their own best interests, too. Sometimes they do good things, sometimes not.
You know,
but actually, between the U.S. government and the U.N. government, as much as I attack the U.S. government, I'd much rather have the U.S. government than the U.N. government.
Because it's within reach. Okay.
Well, because we can control. We have some manner of control over the United States government. The U.N.
We could have a manner of control over the U.N. government if the U.N. actually got its original teeth, which was the way it was intended to be by Roosevelt and Wilson, you would have a say of what goes on in the U.N. But, again, the
mighty country
in the world has gutted it like a fish.
Yeah, I don't want to get too far afield from my topic today.
It's
an important topic, and I'm more than happy to discuss the U.N. with you on another show when we're talking about the U.N. and international affairs. I don't want to go too far afield. I'd like to focus on the AIG. Go ahead.
To go back, most of these, and the reason why I said that is because most of these people are transnational individuals, and you're going to need an international agency to police them.
The problem with international agencies, and I hear people say these things all the time when I do public speeches, is that, frankly, they have less teeth than national agencies. You know, the whole idea of an international world government sounds really good in theory, and maybe it's okay in practice, but it doesn't exist. It has never existed. And the only international governments we've ever had, frankly, are empires. When Rome controlled large part of the Western world, the Roman Empire was the international government. When it was Great Britain, it was Britain. And today, to the extent there's an American empire, it's largely us. But it's national governments. There's never been an international government. Not that it couldn't succeed, but it never has. And international institutions, frankly, international institutions today are far weaker than the institutions of, let's say, Belgium. Which I picked not to pick on Belgium, but a relatively small European country has more power today than all our international institutions combined. So it's a dream, and it's not necessarily a bad dream, but I just think we should be honest about that.
Yeah, well, you're right there. Okay.
Well, I appreciate that. I appreciate that. Just let me just ask you, because then I want to go and I want to play some of the Cramer-Stewart interview. If you have any comment on AIG, do you agree with me that it's just the tip of the iceberg, and for all our justified anger, we need to be looking underneath?
Absolutely, because the real underneath is the deregulation policy set forth by the first Reagan administration.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Okay, which
some of this has been going on for
come to a head 30 years.
Some of this has been going on since, you know, 1929. And what's amazing is when it's all good and our 401ks are going up, nobody complains about Wall Street.
Mm-hmm.
Bernie Sanders, socialist from Vermont, he's complaining all the time, but, you know, no one else. We're good for business, right? We even want Democrats good for business. Well, I'm good for business, too. I think the best way to be good for business is, number one, to let the owners of business have control, and, yes, that includes shareholders. Number two, to make sure that businesses are watched carefully. Because nothing runs business so well but a business that has to make legitimate profits rather than paper profits. And if those profits are legitimate, then that's good for business. They have to announce it on their filings with the government. And terrific. Great. I'm all for transparency. And if a business is not committing fraud and wants to make a lot of money, fine. And I'm even okay with paying decent salaries to people who make a lot of money in the business. But you know what? Today, the market is about where it was in 1997 levels. So it seems to me that all the people that got bonuses between 1997 and today, in 12 years, did nothing to increase their businesses. So in my view, if we have a law that said that you have to pay back, if your company is at the same rate it was in 97, pay back all the bonuses you got since 97. Apparently, you didn't achieve anything. That may seem a little radical for some people.
But my thing is also, we've just got to change the nature of business. And here's a radical thought. If you cannot afford to pay every one of your employees a living wage, then you cannot afford to be in business or employ as many people as you do.
Oh, that actually brings me a nice segue to my next point. I'm going to let you go, Kevin, because I want to make this point, and then I'm going to go right to the Stewart interview. But thank you for your call. I appreciate it. Folks,
no problem.
You want to call in, it's 877-4-HEAD-ON. 877-443-2366. Kevin's point about a living wage brings me to my next point. The argument was made by none other than Larry Summers. And like I said, I'm not above criticizing the Obama administration. That Larry Summers and others made the point that the Edward Liddy, the CEO of AIG, made. You can't undo these contracts. These are contracts. We have to follow contracts. You can't undo them. That would be wrong. I remember, and it wasn't that long ago, what was it, 2 months ago? Less? When we talked about bailing out the auto company. I remember having debates with Republican Mike Lane. And I said, we have to honor contracts. Specifically, we have to honor the contracts of the union workers who worked for 30 or 40 years in the car factories. And got a pension and got health care for the rest of their lives, and now they're 50 and 60. No, they're not 50. They're 70 and 80 and 90 years old. And they were promised health care. They were promised a pension. They did their jobs, and they should be paid. And Mike Lane would say, and he's right about this, well, the company could go to bankruptcy. They could. And they could leave all those health care workers, all those retired employees without health care, leave them in the cold. Because in bankruptcy, when a company can't afford it, you can abolish pre-existing contracts. And I said to Mike Lane at that time, you're right about the law, but wrong about the morality. Yes, we could let GM go to bankruptcy. Yes, we could say to those workers who work 30, 40, 50 years, promised health care and a pension, that you're not going to get it. And what would that achieve us? We'd have to pay for it anyway. Because in America, I don't think we let people starve or we let people go without health care. They'd still go to our emergency rooms and it'd be more expensive than preventative care. We would pay the same money either way. And these workers didn't make the contracts. They weren't the bad guys. The guy who turned the knob to create the car for the last 30 years, that's not his fault. Heck, you want to blame GM for misdesigning cars that didn't take care of green energy and the future? Go for it. Blame the GM execs, but it's not the workers' fault. Why should these unionized workers have to suffer and lose their health care and pensions because of the mistakes their bosses made? So I said we should honor those contracts. And yet the same people who wanted to abolish the contracts that paid for these workers, the same people who wanted to take away the 80-year-old retiree of General Motors, take away his health care, take away her pension. These same people say, well, you know, there's nothing we can do about AIG. These contracts were made last year, and, well, you know, you got to pay these executives hundreds of millions of dollars. What? What? Now is the time to use bankruptcy law. It's very simple. Either we get these bonuses back, or we let AIG fail. Rest in peace, AIG. And all those people that took the bonuses, we'll just sue you. until you have no more money left than a homeless person living under a bridge. All we say to you is, look, if we let AIG go bankrupt, you're not going to get your bonus. Because in bankruptcy court, you can undo these contracts. So why don't you undo them now? And if you don't, well, you know, we can sue you. We can go bankrupt. We can simply announce your name in the public. Let you, while physical threats are not right, we can certainly have a case where your name is well known. You walk into a restaurant like they used to do to O.J. Simpson in California, everybody walks out. You should be a pariah. You should be ostracized. Bring it on. Bring it on. Are you willing to have your whole life being an object of ridicule and derisiveness and losses for money that you would have no right to have if we didn't bail you out in the first place? No, I wasn't willing to lower the boom on the 80-year-old man who worked 40 years in General Motors and take away his health care. But I'm more than willing to lower the boom on these executives who make millions of dollars a year, even when they don't perform for the companies. The same executives that brought our country into the mess that it's in, or maybe even if they're different executives, I'm sorry. I'm still willing to go after the old guys. But maybe you shouldn't be making millions of dollars on the public dole. The president makes $400,000 a year. Are you more valuable to us than President Obama? I don't think so. And that's why I support the efforts in Congress, in the House and the Senate, to have a 90% tax on any bonuses over $100,000 given to people making over $250,000 a year from companies that have received more than $5 billion in U.S. aid. Arguably, it doesn't go far enough. And the fascinating thing about it is, because it's being put on the quick calendar, it's come to a vote, and it needs a two-thirds vote. That's what you need when you don't go through ordinary process, committees, and so forth. It'll be fascinating to see whether this thing passes. To me, it's a win-win. If the Republicans vote it down, we will see whose side they're really on. For all their anger at the AIG execs, if they're not willing to tax these bonus payments at 90%, then maybe they just support them. I'm looking forward to that vote. I think that is the right thing to do. Now I want to play for you some of the Stuart Kramer interview. It behooves you to hear the entire interview, which I certainly will not play for you. But let me play a point, just a small part of it, so you understand what I think John Stewart understands. And it's not just Jim Cramer. Jim Cramer is he's a bozo, but he's symptomatic of the larger problem. Listen in.
You know, look, we're both snake oil salesmen to a certain extent, but we do label the show as snake oil here. Isn't there a problem selling snake oil as a vitamin tonic and saying that it cures impetigo, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera?
Well, isn't that the difficulty here? I think that there are two kinds of people. There are people who come out and they make good calls and bad calls, and they're financial professionals. And then there's people who say they only make good calls, and they're liars. I try really hard to make as many good calls as I can.
I think the difference is not good call, bad call. The difference is real market and unreal market. Let me show you that this is you ran a hedge fund.
Yes, I did for many years.
All right. So this is you give me 208. We're gonna roll 208.
Sure. This is when I was short in my hedge fund and I was positioned short, meaning I needed it down. I would create a level that came beforehand that could drive the futures. It doesn't take much money.
What does that mean?
Okay, this was a hyperbolic example of what I was trying to get people to. You had a great piece about short selling earlier.
Yes,
I've been trying to rein in short selling, trying to expose what really happens. This is what goes on. What I'm trying to say is, and I didn't do this, but I'm trying to explain to people, this is the shenanigans.
It sounded like you were talking about that you had done it.
Then I was inarticulate because I barely traded futures. But I will say this. Mm-hmm. I am trying to expose the stuff exactly what you guys do, and I'm trying to get the regulators to look at it.
Well, see, that's interesting. Roll 210.
I would encourage anyone who's in the hedge fund to do it because it's legal.
Right.
And it's a very quick way to make money and very satisfying.
Okay.
By the way, no one else in the world would ever admit that, but I don't care.
That's right. And you can say that here.
I can't. I'm not going to say it. Yeah.
On TV now.
I want the Jim Cramer on CNBC to protect me from that Jim Cramer.
I think the way you do that is to show, okay, the regulators watch the tape. They realize the shenanigans that goes on. They can go after this. Now, they didn't catch Madoff. That's
a
shame.
When you talk about the regulators, why not the Financial News Network? That's the whole point of this.
Okay.
CNBC could be an incredibly powerful tool of illumination for people that believe that there are two markets. One that has been sold to us as long-term. Put your money in 401ks, put your money in pensions, and just leave it there. Don't worry about it. It's all doing fine. Then there's this other market, this real market that's occurring in the back room, where giant piles of money are going in and out, and people are trading them, and it's transactional, and it's fast, but it's dangerous, it's ethically dubious, and it hurts that long-term market. So what it feels like to us, and I'm speaking purely as a layman, it feels like we are capitalizing your adventure by our pension and our harder, and that it is a game that you know is going on, but that you go on television as a financial network and pretend isn't happening.
Okay. First, my first reaction is absolutely we could do better. Absolutely. There's shenanigans, and we should call them out. Everyone should. I should do a better job at it. But my second thing is I talk about the shorts every single night. I've got people in Congress who I've been working with to try to get the uptick rule. It's a technical thing, but it would cut down on a lot of the games that you're talking about. I'm trying. Am I succeeding? I'm trying.
But the gentleman in that video is a sober, rational individual. And the gentleman on Mad Money is throwing plastic cows through his legs and shouting, sell, 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 and then coming on 2 days later and going, I was wrong, you should have bought. Like, I can't reconcile the brilliance and knowledge that you have in the intricacies of the market with the crazy bullshit I see you do every night.
Fair enough.
To me, the heart of what John Stewart was saying was his part about the two markets. There's a market out front and a market out back. The mafia used to have storehouse fronts where a perfectly legitimate business was going on the front, making a little money perhaps, and then in the back was wild machinations where they would use the money from the legitimate business for whatever the mafia used it for. I don't know, hookers, booze, killing people. The feeling of Americans, I think, is that we're on the take. If you want to know why the stock market has dropped so precipitously, it's not because of Barack Obama's policies. It's because people are now discovering what fools we've been. I didn't invest with Bernie Madoff. 99.999% of Americans didn't invest with Bernie Madoff. But I and many Americans invested in stocks. And we were taken. We were taken by a scheme much, much larger than the tip of the iceberg, which is Bernie Madoff. So all these tips of icebergs, whether it's Bernie Madoff or AIG or Abu Ghraib, need to remind us of the 90% that's going on underneath. Just because a little bit is exposed above water doesn't mean that these things aren't systematic and going on, and they're going on precisely because they're underwater, and I mean that in two senses. Three senses, really. One, like the iceberg, they're underwater, they're unseen. And another sense that they're underwater, they're bankrupt, they've lost money. And third, in the sense that, like the iceberg, it's the majority of the problem, not the part that you can see. We need major systemic changes. And now is the time to do it. Now the time is ripe. Let's channel this populist anger into legislation to protect us for the future. That is the brilliance of Franklin Delano Roosevelt, an imperfect man, like all presidents are imperfect. But what Franklin Delano Roosevelt did is he took the same anger all around the world, the anger that produced the Nazis in Germany, the anger that produced fascism in Italy, the anger that produced, let's face it, anti-Semitism in the United States with Father Coughlin and Huey Long and the likes of him. He channeled that anger into programs, federal regulation that protects us to this day. The Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation is Exhibit 1. President Obama needs to channel that anger, just as Franklin Delano Roosevelt did. There's a reason why he's up there with the greats. Obama can be up there with the greats, too, just like Roosevelt. Channel that anger into programs, into regulations that will protect us for centuries to come. And he can start with shareholders' rights. You may not have the right to control the company, but you damn sure have a right to know what's going on in that company. Absolute transparency. And if you're not transparent, well, then off with your head. For all the complaints and anger about, well, off with the head of AIG, tie them up with piano wire and so forth, it's easy to complain about the past. Those people are gone. In fact, largely the executives that got the bonuses were the people trying to clean up the mess of the thieves that were gone. Let's get the thieves of today. And not just the thieves of today, because people are looking over their shoulders today, but the thieves of tomorrow, and the thieves of 10 years from now, and the thieves of 20 years from now, when the next bubble occurs. Because it will. Clearly it will. Those who don't learn from the past are condemned to repeat it. Let's stop the madness now. The Glass-Steagall Act came out of the 1930s. It separated banks from brokerage houses. It tried to prevent banks from doing the kind of gambling that, they ended up doing. It was repealed 10 years ago after lasting since the 1930s. And the act may have been imperfect, but the idea that banks shouldn't be gambling, that insurance companies shouldn't be gambling, that they should have reserves is a very old idea. And it was because we forgot the lessons of the Great Depression that we were condemned to repeat its faults. Let's take this opportunity. The Chinese tell us that crisis is opportunity. Here is our opportunity now. Take the populist anger. You want to throw the people in AIG in jail? Fine, I don't care. Go after them. But let's fix the problem for the future, because the public's attention span will pass. We will get past this depression. The economy will do good again. And people will start paying hundreds of millions of dollars in bonuses again to executives who run their companies into the ground. Because they're all going to these states like Delaware and South Dakota. We need federal regulation of corporations. And so when you call your member of Congress, and you ask your member of Congress, as you should, to have a 90% tax on these bonuses, make sure it's not just for those that take money from the government. And you do that by saying, not by nationalizing all the corporations, not by taking them all over, by simply giving the owners of the corporation, shareholders, the right to control what they supposedly own. You allow every shareholder in the nation to vote on a resolution in the corporation that is binding and requires the chief executive not to make more than, 20 times the lower worker, and only to make bonuses if the stock goes up and has gone up for 5 years straight, maybe 10 years, so they don't have this short-term shenanigans going around. There is a backroom game going on, and Jim Cramer knows that backroom game, and John Stewart was right to call him out. But Jim Cramer, like everyone else, it's just the tip of the iceberg. And there's one metaphor I hope I haven't ran into the ground too much. It's that we need to look out for the 90% underneath. And the only way to do that is through regulation. Now is the time. We have the president on our side. We have the Congress on our side. And most important of all, we have the American people on our side. And when America is riled up and we're angry, there's nothing we can't do. So when you call your member of Congress and you ask them to claw back on those salaries for AIG, ask them also for federal regulation to protect corporations from now and for decades in the future. I hope you enjoyed the show. This is Mark Levine. Signing off.